Hey guys, I'm Alex.
And I'm Drew.
And today on the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast, we're going to cover We Live by Iñaki Miranda, Roy Miranda, Ava de la Cruz, and David Sharp.
Let's go. Sounded different.
Yeah, and I just want to apologize. I said David Sharp, even though it says Dave right here. So I hope that Dave Sharp isn't offended when people call him David because I did it accidentally.
Maybe he really likes it and he feels esteemed.
Perhaps.
Perhaps not. How are we doing, fellows? We've got Tori back in the house.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Always a pleasure. We've missed you.
And today I am Alex.
And today... he is Alex, and I'm Drew.
All right, so we're going to cover a book, and I'm going to say before we even get started, it's We Live, and I found out about it because of our perennial fan, Ryan Pond, who has his own podcast, The Cosmic Campfire. Go look it up. I'm going to put links in the show notes for this one because it's where I found this, because he actually has a podcast where he interviewed the creators, him and another guy, interviewed the creators of this, and it was really good. And I listened to it before I actually read it, until they made a comment about it being a big spoiler, and I stopped, and I went and found it, and I read it. But I already had a few things spoiled for me. So, this is by Aftershock Comics. Mm-hmm. You can't just find it anywhere. I ordered the trade paperback off of Amazon, and it took me a while. I think it's better at being back in stock now. Like when I did it, I had to go to like four or five different places. Actually, I didn't get it on Amazon. I got it from a random comic shop.
Interesting.
But I think you can get it on Amazon now. It's available digitally if you get the five different
floppies.
I haven't found a digital trade version yet, but you got to read it. It's really good. If you're the type of person who's just not going to read it, then we're going to talk to you about it because it's that good. But if you're the sort of person who's like, you know, I'd like to read a story about kind of a parallel, alternate future Earth, whatever. I don't know exactly what's going on in terms of where it is, but it's really interesting. It's a great story and worth you finding and reading before we spoil the crap out of it for you.
Yeah. It's really good. I don't know if eventually it'll end up on Comixology. If it were to end up on a platform, that's where it would be.
Yeah.
But just because it's an independent comic doesn't mean it's going to end up there.
I mean, you can buy it through Comixology.
Correct. Yeah. So that might be the easier way for...
Or Kindle.
People. Right.
Like, it's basically the same thing. So, yeah. And I've gone on their website before to try to figure out a way to get it. And I think you're better off either going directly to Amazon to look for the trade paperback. And be warned... make sure you find one that says volume one, because this is the cover of number one.
Right.
So, yeah. Make sure you're getting one that has the collected volumes.
Yeah. It's super cool. Drew read it first and then he handed it to me. I knocked it out and loved it. And then we just got it to Tor last night and he was able to pound it down before recording today.
This morning.
Hey.
So I just want to make...
You're the freshest on it.
Yeah.
And I'm the... spoiledest, the oldest. Yeah. I don't know. What would the opposite of fresh?
Rotten.
I'm the rottenest. I just wanted to give that up front. Definitely, we encourage you to read it beforehand so you can experience it, and then we can spoil it for you.
Yeah, this podcast isn't going anywhere. You got time to go find it.
So
get it mailed to you.
Now we can sidestep for a minute and ask the ages-old question, what you been reading, yo?
It will never go away, will it? I can't pull that up. Never mind. I was going to pull up my phone, but we're using that to record right now. Marvel Unlimited has been my go-to, app of reading comics of late. I have read a handful of more X books, though I'm falling further and further behind as the hours wane.
As in Bruce Wayne,
W-A-Y-N-E. Follow me on Twitter. I'm reading a lot of the Ultimate Universe. I think I mentioned this last episode that I was kind of jumping into the My Ultimate Year, which is kind of a spinoff of the My Marvelous Year podcast. If you're not checking out that podcast, you should. It's really cool. They're doing like a full rundown of like all the Marvel comics since the inception of the company. And they pick like the 10 must reads from every year. And they cover that on a podcast every week. And they just hit the 90s, I think. So super cool, but they hit enough Patreon.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland.
Thank you.
Portlandia used to be on Netflix. Amazing show. It's not there anymore. Yeah, I've watched it a couple times. Yeah, so apparently good. Not. So good. that time you get the first Teen Girl Squad hair of the episode.
Anyway, what I've been reading.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. Read some Ultimate Elektra, Ultimate Daredevil, some Ultimate Team Up, which follows Spider-Man teaming up with several different characters. They hit like a Patreon level, I think, and they're like, all right, we're going to do basically the My Marvelous Year thing for the Ultimate Universe. And they're doing the entirety of the Ultimate Universe, which is not as big as all Marvel continuity, but is still a pretty significant undertaking. So I've been following that along and listening to their podcast a little bit. I don't think I've read much more than that, though. I've been a busy boy. I've been coding more and more, which takes up some of my comic time. What have you been reading, yo?
Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
I mean, other than that book I was talking about last time about the... I forgot what it was about. Oh, existence. The threads of existence slowly coming apart. But I have... You know, last time I also said I finished the Netflix Marvel shows.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped over... This is a loosely... Like, I think it's a DC title because he showed up in Crisis on Infinite Earths, but I'm watching Lucifer.
Mm.
And I also restarted Gotham other day, because that's one that I'm like, I think I saw like 8 episodes and then just
they stopped. Also pulled that into the Arrowverse, right?
I didn't notice that one being referenced, but I don't know the characters. Right. So it could be that they did and I just didn't catch it.
Gotcha.
So that's what I've been doing comic book wise. Yeah, that's it. What about you, Torrance?
I'm still reading the new Stephen King, Billy Summers. And when I say reading, I mean listening with my ears.
Oh, okay.
Haven't they done studies? It's more or less the same thing, right? Like your brain takes it in a similar manner?
I wouldn't know.
I think Katie said something about that. I can't remember.
I used to listen, like not even like an Audible. But like the first Kindle I ever bought did text-to-speech.
Oh, really?
And I used to it was basically like Microsoft Sam reading to me, but I changed it to a female voice because the first thing I ever listened to, actually it may have been a guy's voice the first time. I listened to the Tommyknockers.
Oh my gosh.
But it was like, Tommyknockers, Tommyknockers. Yeah, it was funny.
Wow.
And then I changed it to a woman's voice whenever I listened to the... Hunger Games trilogy. And that's whenever I slowly increased my reading or my listening comprehension to be able to listen at double speed to things. So
have either of you read Dune?
I read
the first
book. Me too. Yeah, the first book and then that was it.
I'm considering reading it before the movie comes out. That's what she said.
I am a very, very slow reader, so maybe I'd benefit from listening like you do.
It's good.
But
the movie looks incredible.
I haven't watched any of it because I'm like, I will watch it.
The trailer.
So I'm once again, not like just kind of like we have Shang-Chi this week, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't actually seen any trailers and I'm keeping it that way.
Cool. Yeah.
Did you watch the original Dune with David Lynch?
I haven't seen that either.
You should watch that before this new movie, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is this a sequel?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's a remake. But I think you need to see David Lynch's vision, which he says he hates this movie. So
he hates the new one or the...
No, he hates his own movie.
Okay.
Interesting. It's like a cult classic, right? I mean,
it's
like...
great. I love it.
Interesting. Maybe I'll find it later this evening.
I realized I just totally bogarted the entire conversation. How is Billy Summers?
Oh, it's good. It's Stephen King's been a real... just a crime novel.
So it's one of those, like, could actually happen on Earth?
Yeah. He usually gets weird at some point with it, but I haven't got there yet.
I haven't read any new Stephen King since The Institute, I don't think.
I think this is the next one after The Institute.
Oh, okay. I was thinking maybe there was something that happened in the middle. Maybe I'm making it up.
Oh, no, wait, there was If It Bleeds, which is okay, a I short read stories.
That. Oh, more short stories.
Okay, yeah.
Cool. I didn't realize that was short stuff. Once I finish this novel I'm reading right now, I might be in a short story mood. And I think I still, you lent me a book. I had a bunch of short stories.
Yeah.
And I haven't read any of them because it's a hardback and I'm afraid of it hitting me in the face whenever I fall asleep reading in bed. But one of these days I will.
Anything else we've been reading?
No.
Well, let's jump into this We Live. Okay, so we're turbo-moding through this in a manner. We're not going to completely gloss over it, but...
It is five issues. We're going to try to cover it in one.
Yeah.
Because we're wondering, and let us know what you think. Like, we just finished Mr. Miracle, and it was like six episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, were you with us the whole time, or were there any of you that were like, man, I wish this would have been a little quicker so we could move to something else?
Right.
So we're going to try that. This is the pilot program.
Yeah, it's a hard balance to strike, getting super detailed, but also... sweeping and over many stories.
Even if we listen, even if you listen and we do spoil it, if we just give you the 100 mile above
the high points,
whatever that's called, maybe it'll make you want to go check it out yourself.
Yeah.
So once again, this is by the Miranda brothers, Ava Dela Cruz, Dave Sharp. Definitely after you listen to this and you read it, not particularly in that order, go down to the show notes and click on the link to Ryan Pond's. What?
This person also.
They
did the art. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I thought they just did the writing. My bad.
Go check out Ryan Pond's podcast where he interviews them because there's a lot of cool insight. All right. So to start with, I'm just going to say the art is really cool. It's more, I would say, on the cartoonish side than the realistic, but it is still realistic.
Yeah. It's not completely this, but I got like very light anime like inspirations for some of it.
Yeah.
Not all of it, but it's very cool. I liked it a lot. The colors are fantastic.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And that was Ava Dela Cruz.
Yeah. Really like the color in this.
So one thing you'll notice on the very first page is that there is a QR code down in the bottom. And
this is cool.
It is really neat. I sat down when I read this, I was in the waiting room while my wife's car was getting repaired, and I just had my headphones in, and every time one popped up, I would just listen and let it play through, and just sometimes I'd keep reading, sometimes I'd not. But man, it really sets the tone. They collaborated with somebody. I wonder if it gives credits for that here.
You haven't actually told them what the QR codes go to yet.
Music.
Yeah. So while he's looking at, they actually commissioned. I don't think it was all the same artist, but there was one guy that was a reoccurring artist, and they had them basically make a musical piece that kind of accompanies the issue by issue thing or just significant moments in that. And then they took what was often the first big splash page, and they like lightly animated it on the YouTube channel. So like, for instance, the first page is this guy sitting there smoking, and like the smoke coming off the tip of his cigarette is animated, and then like the TV that's flashing in the background is like slightly illuminating the room and like a light flicker. It's super cool. The one thing that I felt was different about it, or at least when I heard that they had like accompaniment tracks to this comic, I thought it was going to be more soundscape-ish, kind of like some of the synth stuff you've done before. I thought it was going to be like that, but these are more just songs.
Yeah.
They kind of...
It feels like credit music to me.
Right.
You know, like, and that's what it acts as a lot. Mm-hmm. And on the thing, they said they wanted it to kind of set the tone. Like, it's a guy and a guitar, most cases, you know, but it's perfect. Like, my headspace was not there whenever I started. And then as soon as I heard it, I was just like, oh, wow. And I'll say it now in case I forget to, because of the music and the story and everything working together, this book gave me goosebumps.
Mm.
Like, there was one spot that I was reading, and I was just like, oh, man, I haven't gotten goosebumps from a comic book in a long time, if ever. But music does a whole lot for that.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, if you're able to get this, like, in front of you in a physical format with headphones in, definitely check it out. I couldn't find the name of the person that was doing it, but the QR code takes you to a YouTube video that will tell you who it was.
Yeah.
But it's really good.
Yeah. You got to listen to the music too, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's super cool touch. I wish more comics would do something similar.
It made me have so many ideas of wanting to do that myself. All right, so basically, I'm going to give you the 60-second catch-up that they give you right in the beginning. The world has started, you know, using up its resources and all that stuff. Things are going bad. Picture just the potential for what this Earth looks like.
They say it was like the year 2080-something, 2084.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So anyway, things have gone bad. It's to the point where we can't recover.
Yeah.
So we don't know what we're going to do. And then at some point, these bracelet things show up from outer space. And these kids can put them on. And it basically, they're from this alien race that is going to help us by taking our kids and helping the human race to not die.
Well, there's a finite amount. There's only 5,000 of them. So not all kids get to go.
It's just like you get them and then you have to get to a destination point at one of them. They call them Megalopolis.
Yeah, there's 9 different kind of pillars all over the world.
And that's where the pickups or whatever is going to happen. So, that's it. So
the goal is to get these kids off the planet so the human race can survive because they've already decided the planet's doomed and this whatever alien race that we don't get to see is like, all right, we're going to kind of extend this helping hand, but this is the best we can do.
And
everybody else is going to die.
If these dropped down around one of the megalopolises, you're easy. You just got to hang tight. Mm-hmm. But we're following the story of a group of kids who are trying to get there from the outer regions, what they call the Enduros. Mm-hmm. So you're just like trekking, going through woods, going through desolate spaces, whatever, trying to get into caravans that are going there. And that's who the guy who on the first page we saw, he is kind of escorting, driving the bus for one of these things, these caravans.
Which is kind of crazy because you'd have to like be of a certain mindset to be like, all right, I'm going to die, but just for the greater good, I'm going to try to help these people get to these destinations. And it's really dangerous and it's going to be tough.
And just so you know, we have a timer that's going down like all the way through. And we have one right here. It says the year 2084 present, 5 days to extraction day. So you have 5 days. If you don't make it to the place, you're out of luck.
Right. Just because you have a bracelet, like you still got to be at the spot.
And then we turn the page and we get introduced to Hatoto. Though at first it looks like we're in a dragon superhero battle, but it's just the kid's imagination. We got this kid. I'm going to describe him real quick. Did it ever say, or would you guess how old he is?
4 or 5.
Yeah. And he's wearing this red jumpsuit with this circle thing on his chest and this awesome helmet that looks like a cat.
Yeah.
And he's just running around playing and looking, you know, him and his sister we meet, they're on their way to catch one of these caravans, these buses. And he runs into this house. And I got serious Walking Dead vibes through a lot of this opening, just because that's what it is, essentially. Where, like, the world has moved on and there's a lot of people who have either gone to the megalopolises to try to make a living or whatever. So there's just this boarded up house and he goes in there and she grabs him to pull him out. And because she saw something she didn't want him to see. And it turns out that there's some people that had hung themselves in there because they would rather do that than live on this earth.
Yeah. I guess we should say, I always think of, is this too spicy for Sarah? I don't think so.
No.
There are a handful of like slightly mild things.
Yeah. But I think the plot sells it every time. It's not like gore, gratuitous gore or blood or anything for the sake of it. Like you see in some comic books, like they do it as tastefully as it could be done, I think.
Right. Yeah. So Sarah, because if you're listening, that's always the one, my bar for the spiciness. I think Sarah could enjoy this one.
So anyway, they run into this little clearing and we have this crazy off-road looking bus thing. And that's where the guy is from the first page. And a whole bunch of people, all in twos. There's like the kid with the bracelet and then their keeper, their handler, whatever, you know, their friend that's helping him along.
Yeah.
And
that was actually a thing. I don't know if we mentioned, like you can have one person come with you to at least to this to the area to get you dropped off. Like, you don't have to venture alone.
And so we get on the bus and we meet these two other people. It's something like I noticed for a while, most of the kids with the bracelets are very colorful and exuberant with their dress, you know, and, but they all have somebody with them. And we meet this guy who's equally wild dressed, and he has this gargantuan figure behind him and this giant trench coat and helmet.
Yeah.
And
like
everybody's
a dystopian Baymax.
Yeah. And they're like, hi, that's Alice and I'm Humbo. So like we didn't, I think we said it before, but we're following with the first people we met was a little kid named Hatoto and his sister Tala. So they're kind of talking and we get the bus and they're just driving through the night and you see these just derelict cities.
Yeah.
You know, wrecked. And they pull into a little gas station, fuel station so that everybody can kind of regroup and everybody gets out, stretches their legs, and we meet another person and all of a sudden, like, for whatever reason, they see this totem pole thing and they want to go off into the woods.
Yeah.
And he's, I think, Hatoto is like playing in this old rusted out car. And then this is the first time we see these crazy looking, what would you call them?
They're zombie-esque.
They call them molders.
Right. I think it's kind of alluded to later on that they're mutated creatures that used to inhabit the earth.
And right there, you know, they're grabbing these kids and the dude from the first scene just like shoots them with this gun and right through the head.
Yeah.
And they run away and they think we're okay. And one of them, one of the other adults that's with them is talking to the girl that we just met.
Right.
And we see that she's been scratched on the arm. And in a matter of panels, she turns into one of those molders.
Right.
And the guy, she was like, this is no longer a child.
Right.
Hand me the revolver. And kills her. And then we move on. And like, this was such a quick change.
I Am Legend vibes.
Yeah. Like, it's just like,
you know, if you get infected,
you
got to
do it.
Sorry, but you have to do it.
And then like, before you even have a chance to react to that, everybody's back on the bus and there's an incredible lightning storm and wrecks this thing. And everybody's just, we're on foot. You know, we're having to walk and the kind of resting after the, after all of that. And the guy, the kid, what was his name?
Hatoto?
Humbo.
Oh, Humbo.
Humbo walks over and he sees Hatoto's helmet. And he's like, oh, hey, let me fix that for you.
Yeah.
And just, we've got this crazy helmet that he was just wearing for fun.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's like a VR helmet.
Right.
And he puts
like
it
a
on.
Google Glass augmented like reality thing.
The worst time to put it on.
Yeah.
All of these things, he's like seeing pandas and futuristic things. Meanwhile, these horrific, like not, I wouldn't say horrific, but a monster comes out of the woods with this kind of similar to what the molder looks like, but it's what happens if a lion gets it. And
right.
It has, you've got to see it. It just, just picture more eyes and all these tendrils and it steps up. And the guy from the first scene, he comes up and he flips. Oh, no, I'm jumping ahead. Oh, yeah, I am definitely jumping ahead. So he comes and he's like, I'll take care of this. But then before we get to see anything, we have a flash to the past. And this is just a kind of a getting to know Tala and Hatoto. And she's explaining what that symbol means on his chest. It's just three concentric circles. And you're just like, This is me. This is your mom. This is you. We're always with you.
Right.
And that's back. And then it cuts to seeing two crosses buried in the front yard, knowing that he has no family other than Tala.
Right. Yeah. So and this is kind of a tough thing, like, because they're having to explain to this little kid, like, how do we get him to be okay with trekking on this really dangerous journey to also be eventually left alone? Like, they're going to send him into space to survive.
And then we close out with another big page with a QR code, just kind of like the forest that they're about to go through. And it just says, wherever we may be, wherever we may go, you know, and that's the end of this first one. I'm going to try to go a little bit quicker in the next couple so that we can get this in time, but I think this is a decent time. We're going to have to stop.
Cool. We can take a quick break and we'll be right back.
All right, so where we left off, a lion with alien tendril looking things
yeah.
Had just popped out to attack our band of
the chosen
celestial travelers.
Yeah.
And he, before we even really get into it, he's the guy from the first scene. He has a name and I don't remember what it was. He steps out and he like has this backpack on that like opens up and like all these bright lights and things start flashing and spinning.
Yeah.
And he was like, all right, we're not a threat. And the thing turns away and starts to leave. And then this guy comes up out of nowhere and shoots him.
Yeah.
In the head, his blood splatters everywhere. And he's like, what did you do? He was going to run away. We were no threat. Now we're coated in his blood and these things can smell us from miles away.
Right.
So you've just killed us.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's like, oh no, what? And yeah, so they take off and they just try to go as quick as they can. And they end up in this, walking through some water and they're like, hey, actually this could be good. Maybe it'll wash it off of us. And this is another of those QR code spots mm-hmm. with some really nice music to yeah. put on as you keep reading. And then some other things pop up, but it's just, it seems like they're not.
Yeah. There's going to be like a succession of just like, yeah. you know, they're going to encounter these creatures throughout. I mean, you're just going to understand that there's some close calls and even some casualties of like yeah. characters that you didn't think would actually not yeah. make it.
And then, they get up to these water or these seaweed things. And he's like, oh, these are great. These feed off dead cells. If we can just be in here for a few minutes, we'll be fine. And then before he can really even finish saying it, the guy who started the whole story gets his head ripped off yeah. by one of those guys that came to get him. I think they called them rippers.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh no. And there's a bunch of them just mm-hmm. coming up and you're like, those you just see
looking things,
a field of blood. And then Alice, mm-hmm. the
Baymax looking.
Yeah. Just rips her helmet off and thing. And she kind of looks like one of those, but a gorilla version.
Mm-hmm.
And she just swoops up, her Humbo and then Hototo and Yala or Tala. And they just take off running.
Yeah.
Getting away. And we kind of jump forward and basically they're making their way on their own, trying yeah. to find their thing.
You kind of assume that everybody else didn't make it. Like,
yeah.
And the only reason they got out is because, oh, whatever one of these zombie things is actually Alice. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, she's good.
Yeah.
And protects them.
And we'll get a little flashback on that for some explanation. But they find this field of mech warrior
yeah.
suits from something called the Rumble Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys is just playing in it and starts, you know, has it for a little bit, the Humbo.
Yeah.
And then we do get to look back and see that his parents apparently were experimenting or mm-hmm. studying these things and Alice was like born in captivity maybe.
Yeah.
And somehow they connected.
Right.
And that was actually the end of that issue. You know, there's a lot of important stuff like that big thing right there at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of move ahead and we get to take in issue 3, we get to take a step even farther into the past because we saw those molders. We didn't really know where they came from, but we get to see that there's this university. What does it say? It just says Faculty of Medicine.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's just some people studying these. And basically we learn that it's somehow connected to the earth. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe like the earth is trying to get back at us for mistreating it for so long by mutating our dead bodies. And so they have some of these that they're studying. And one of the doctors realizes that you can maintain the human brain activity if you inject it with certain chemicals and whatnot. And basically we get to see that eventually his whole thing gets taken over, but he continues injecting himself. So you have this molder zombie looking creature that is still talking into a digital recorder,
right.
like continuing his studies. And then we pan back even farther and see that they have Hototo and Tala in captivity.
Yeah.
Like they're about to extract their blood or whatever to inject it into these other molders. And Tala hands off this little note. She's like, I wrote this note for you and I don't think I'm going to make it much longer. So yeah.
Yeah, this was a really sad moment.
Read this after I'm gone. You know, you're the beacon. You're important. Mm-hmm. And the Mulder, one of the zombies, comes in and gets Tala and starts trying to take her out. And then we see that they're both kind of, are they both strapped down or is it just Tala?
I can't remember. I just know the mech thing comes in.
Before anything can happen,
right?
Our buddy Humbo, it turns out he didn't die or whatever. He, whenever these two were taken, I guess he was off in his mech suit with Alice, and he just starts shredding through these things because I guess he learned how to use it.
Yeah.
And Alice is also chewing on the professor's face.
Yummy.
And just like, so part of me is like, oh man, that might not be good because this guy sounded like maybe he was on a way to a breakthrough to at least salvage some version of the human race.
Yeah. That was another moment where I got I Am Legend vibes.
Yeah.
Just trying to find a cure. Like Dr. Robert Neville from the very accurate book to movie portrayal of I Am Legend. It's the same thing.
And then we cut to another QR code scene with them just wandering through. And we find this beacon looking thing that's just lit up. Looks very similar to what the guy's backpack did.
Yeah.
But then they keep moving on and they make it to this train station that they were trying to make it to all this time.
Yeah. It was going to take them to one of the nine.
Yeah. And they look,
points.
They look close and there's these guys with painted faces reading. I'm not going to even read it. Basically saying like, it is our path to be taken when the world goes, you know, and they have this, all these kids that have the bracelets on their knees with guns to the back of their head.
Yeah. They're the Westboro Baptist Church of this whole thing. Not very cool people.
Pretty much. And that issue ends with them just shooting all of these kids while our little cohort of kids is back there watching horrified.
Yeah. Like imagine like you think you're about to make it, you get to this drop zone and there's these just extremists out there and they're capping little kids because they think that nobody should be safe. Like this is how we're all supposed to go.
Yeah.
Pretty dark stuff.
Yeah. I was just like, oh God. All right. Yeah.
They don't show that. I mean, there's some spice, but it's implied.
And then we start the next one, 10 hours to extinction, with a couple people we've never met.
Mm-hmm.
Just a guy and a girl making out on top of a car and just talking about, man, I can't believe it's almost over. At least we're doing it together. Hey, basically, you want to do drugs one last time? So they both take these pills and just start seeing all kinds of stuff around them. And they see these bodies, these glowing bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, it's not the end. God's going to save us. And that's the last we see of them.
Yeah. It's an interesting little interjection. Maybe it's just kind of a look of
What else is going on in the world?
What relationships might be like that aren't going to go on. Just how are people handling knowing that the end is coming?
Yeah. So, and then we cut back to, where all of the little bracelet kids got killed and they're like, oh, what are we going to do? And basically they're like, well, we need a distraction. We need to get onto that. And they take the mech suit and he uses it to basically zap a whole bunch of them in one spot, making them all look over there while they hurry on to the train in another place. But they don't quite, it doesn't last, the suit doesn't last long enough. And they see him and they're like, oh no, it's empty. And then they see these kids running on and a few of them, the train starts taking off. And we think that they're all home free, but then they realize that a bunch of those cultists made it on. So they're like, the only thing we can do is separate the cars before they get to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's a problem as they do that. And Alice is stuck on one side.
Right.
And Tala, Humbo, Hatoto are on the other one as they start to separate. And he's just like, no, I can't do this. We're always together, which is something he said a few times. So Humbo jumps off and gets back into the train car with the impending approach of the cultists while Tala and Hototo are on a train car, completely empty.
Headed to their destination.
On the way, yeah.
But we lost Alice and Humbo.
It's just those two, and they're both angry, and we kind of get this moment where Tala finally tells what was in the letter,
mm-hmm.
as wind kind of comes in through the window and rips the letter off. So we get to read the letter. Hatoto never read it. It's basically right. just talking about, we love you, you know, you're, all this stuff.
Yeah. It's a touching and sad moment. It was very
with music to go along with it again.
Yeah.
Then we finally make it to Mother Nine, which is the place that they were going to. And you get to the front of this line, and there's some security guards that are about to take, they just want to take all of the kids with the bracelets, and they take him, and I think they put him on a bus, and he's riding off. Or did he make it onto a bus? Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And then, somebody like comes up and starts yelling, like, they're not taking them to the beacon. They found a way to harvest the bracelets off of them,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to go cut them off and give them to the highest bidder. And Tala sees that and is like, oh no. And runs off and gets in another bus with a bunch of people who are going to try to intercept them.
Right.
Just as like, if it wasn't bad enough earlier, whenever we had these weird lion looking things,
mm-hmm.
now we've got these giant bug looking tendril, things.
Well, this is kind of it too. Like there's a reason there's a hard deadline of when mm-hmm. these kids got to get here, because they've somehow been able to quantify this is when it's going to hit the fan.
This is the overrun time.
Yeah. This is where everybody's going to die. Like, you got to get them here by this point or it's too late.
Yeah.
And we're getting closer and closer, and it's not like a switch is flipped and that happens. It's just ramping up. So we're already getting these creatures attacking and hurting people.
Yeah. And the next issue, which is the last mm-hmm. issue of the set, picks up kind of showing us some other locations. Like, so specifically, like right now, it looks like we're at Mother 5 and a bunch of people are there waiting. But at this location, it's mm-hmm. not a horde of crazy creatures. It's a tidal wave that comes in.
Right.
And like kind of wipes them out. So Number 5 has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know. Then we jump back to the one where Tala was. And there's something about lightning storms upturning buses here, because it does it to hers. And she gets out and she's like, Hatoto. It's a really cool scene. We got more music. This QR code is entitled We Die.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we live.
It's very end of the world.
Mm-hmm. And then we come back to Hatoto's stuff, and we find out that it's exactly what that guy was saying.
Mm-hmm.
They're not taking him to the beacon point or whatever. They're taking him to cut his arm off and give this thing to some rich kid.
Right. Because everybody wants to escape Earth. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, well, let's just, why don't we get one? They don't think it's fair.
Yeah. And this whole time we've glossed over it, but Hatoto has kept asking, like talking about how he wanted to be a superhero. And you see this really cool scene where he like closes his eyes because he's run away, and this guy in a lab coat's coming after him, or an apron actually. Yeah. And he's like, no. And he like air punches at him with his eyes closed. And at that exact moment, so these vines, root things from the ground, come through and just kill this guy.
Yeah.
And more of those bugs have made it in. And
which was not him. It was just
a
timely thing.
And we're fortunately, a good guy shows up, a security guard. He's like, you should be at the beacon. And he kind of just gets him and tries to help him along.
He essentially escorts him all the way there.
And finally, we see that he's like, I have the bracelet, let him in. And Tala and Hatoto see each other.
Right.
And they both made it to the beacon. And you turn the page, and it's just a full black page with a timer of 000:00.
Right
colon,
before 00. That,
all
the bracelets started glowing on the mm-hmm. kids that were standing there that made it.
And just like you do on all TV shows, this is where we pull back and see something even farther in the past.
Yeah.
A place we haven't seen. It says past, Supreme Intergalactic Council. And this reminded me a whole lot of every scene of Krypton, pre-Krypton exploding that we've ever seen. People in a big circle with glowing things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically just representatives from all these different
galaxies, worlds, and universes and worlds,
And there's like a lot, like this is really good information, but I'm not going to go into it
mm-hmm.
for the sake of time. But they basically say, yes, we know that Earth, it's going to die.
Right.
So we, the council, do we vote to save it?
Yeah.
And basically they vote not to. Mm-hmm. They're like, we can save it or we can let it die. Those are the two options. And after it passes, somebody speaks up and is like, there is a third option, the Palladian bracelets.
Yeah.
And everybody votes and is like, okay, we know the risk. We accept the risk. So this is what we see. Like, this is the council is what sent the bracelets. And that's all the information we get.
Yeah.
So then we cut back to now, and all these kids with the bracelets are starting to just float up into the air. And, you know, Hototo's screaming, Tala, Tala. And then this grotesque scene, like, they all just start mutating and like
it almost looks like they're being like weird cocoon type, not exactly like, but like it looks pretty gross.
Yeah.
And
we see this, like, some of them just look instantly gross.
Yeah.
Hototo looks a little different.
His definitely looks more cocoonish.
Yeah. His is a cocoon. Some other people look like amorphous.
I don't know. It reminds me of the Inhumans whenever the Terrigen Mist thing happens. Like, they end up in these cocoons.
Mm-hmm. And it backs out. We see this yellow burst.
Yeah.
It just like
golden light.
And it seems to kill a lot of the insects and stuff like that. And then the cocoons, we see them, they slowly change into adults.
Yeah.
Like, in wicked suits. Like, right here, we see Hototo right in the front looking like a full-grown human in a superhero version of his outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see somebody that looks like a hedgehog, somebody that looks like a wasp, an electric person, all these things. And then they jump down, and Hototo, superhero, lands
right
in front of Tala. And she's like, Hototo? And his helmet lifts back, and he was like, Tala, don't be afraid. I'm here to protect.
And he's a grown man.
He's a grown man. And it shows him and all these other things, all the braceleted kids that are now full-grown superheroes flying up into the air to attack these.
And defend everybody.
And defend everybody. And just like, whoa, well, that wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah.
So these Palladian bracelets were never meant to retrieve these kids. It was meant to give Earth a way to protect itself.
Yeah. Super cool idea. Pretty cool.
And then we turn the page and we get 3 years later, and there's this, you know, a city, and this guy in a cloak, he just walks up, and there's this robot guarding it. He's like, my scanners are not detecting any ID. What's your business, sir? He's like, no business, just looking for my friends. And we get one last music thing, and the cloak kind of comes back, and it looks just like Humbo, only older.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, my father used to say, every sunrise means you're not dead. So it's like, this is basically our post-credit scene.
Right.
And
so it ends.
Yeah. And yeah, before we talk about anything else, we'll just take a second to discuss this. I loved it. I mean, I really enjoyed it. The music helped like do so much for me as I was reading it. But it was just like 5 issues and a great story that took you on a ride.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really dug it.
Yeah, I'm grateful liked it a lot.
That Ryan put it on our radar.
Yeah, I enjoyed the music a lot. I will say it is not 100% necessary for you to listen to it to do it.
No.
It's a nice additive for sure.
Yeah.
It's a cherry on top. The idea is super cool. Like, I was not expecting superhero comic
me
book
either.
At all.
And I'm glad I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was expecting this is the end of the world.
You know? Yeah, you're constantly thinking like, okay, the goal like from the get is get these kids to this place so they can be shipped off the planet and start a new planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what they're doing, and it wasn't that at all. They get pulled up and they get beamed down immediately, and now there's thousands of superheroes suddenly inhabiting the planet, ready to defend the Earth.
Yeah, and you know the people said we know the risk. Meaning,
right.
It could be that these superheroes go on to be a super powerful and could pose a threat.
Yeah.
So, but they saved Earth.
Right.
A bunch of people who didn't know anything about Earth.
Yeah.
You know.
So super cool, and I think it has been confirmed. Yes. That this is not just a one-off. Now this is starting an entire
I think
universe.
Any time now. Whenever I listened to them, I think they said maybe before 2022 or 2021 is out. They might be continuing. I'm not sure, but we're there's no way to know. There was a free comic book day version that came out recently. I wasn't able to get my hands on it. Yeah. So, what did you think, Torrance?
I thought it was great. Same thing that you were talking about, the use of music made a huge difference. I'm always listening to something while I'm reading a book anyway, and it kind of textures or informs how I receive the book. So I try to match what I'm listening to whatever I'm reading. Mm-hmm. And this did that for me in a way that the artist intended, which is really cool.
And I just thought it was not even in the realm of the sort of music that I would have put on in the background.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's just, it wouldn't, not that I thought it was bad. I thought it was great. And I was just like,
unexpected.
I would have put something much more cinematic on, as opposed to a singer-songwriter thing that was still cinematic in its own way.
Right.
And it was all in a different language. And mm-hmm. I didn't know what he was saying the whole time, but it still set the mood. But yeah, it makes me want to soundtrack some comic books.
Yeah. This one's super cool. Drew already touched on this earlier. You absolutely should go out of your way to read this one. Find a trade, buy it digitally, whatever. The art is beautiful. I particularly love the colors and just the twist at the end.
Yeah.
That essentially makes this whole thing just a prologue.
Yeah. And on the interview I listened to, they said they wrote it specifically so that it would stand alone.
Cool.
If there wasn't enough interest, it was still a great story.
Yeah, absolutely.
If there was, I think they said every superhero symbol mm-hmm. comes from somewhere. And that's what this was about.
Cool.
It was talking about what Hatoto's little symbol was mm-hmm. all about. It was about his journeys here with his sister, with his family, trying to save his planet.
Right.
So, the Aftershock Comics is going to be continuing the series with another one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Miranda brothers did say that they have so many ideas for what's going to happen in this We Live universe.
Yeah.
And we already know there's galactic implications here. We have other universe, other civilizations. We've got crazy zombie type things on Earth. Though 3 years later, maybe they have that under control.
Yeah.
We got superheroes, but built on a civilization that was already in bad shape. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot they could do for sure. I will say, and this is just a reality, like if this sounds like something maybe you'd be even passively interested in, like you should go out of your way to support them because, I mean, bottom line is a thing. And if they don't sell books, they're not going to keep making this story and then they'll just kind of never know. So that's unfortunately how the comic world works. And sometimes they're lucky to even get a 6-issue run out. And
there's so many that because I've kind of gotten into the Kickstarter mm-hmm. world of things. And there's so many of them that I see that are literally going Kickstarter to Kickstarter.
Yep.
I mean, this has the backing of Aftershock, so it's not quite there, but yeah, like if they release the next book and the numbers have plummeted, then there's not going to be a third collection.
Right. I mean, and even so, like it's an Aftershock book, but Aftershock isn't the big two.
Exactly.
And they don't have the power of the marketing and the, you know, I think it's kind of a common thing. Like big two kind of pays the bills for a lot of comic book artists and writers. And
I mean,
they do their passion projects on
something that could be really good is if you have a comic shop you like to go to, go there, ask them if they're going to get We Live.
Right.
See if they can get it because
you can
request
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it puts it on more people's radar, and then we get, and then, you know, 10 years from now, We Live as a thriving empire.
Yeah.
So.
Could be. Any closing thoughts, fellas?
I was curious, I mean, from a writer standpoint, was there anything that really stood out to you about the book?
Well, I mean, other than it was just so well done and put together.
So I've heard that from multiple people. Like, it's so one of the best put together collections of five books they've read in a long time. I was curious if you felt similar at all.
I am usually not thinking in that head, or I'm not in that headspace whenever I'm reading something. Just I'm there to enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And this was definitely enjoyable.
I would say, I mean, I've recently read a handful of, like, pretty popular short runs, you know, God Country, Black Hammer, and while those are being fleshed out right now, I feel like this one's probably the most unique as far as like being able to continue going with a lot of rich content. Like Black Hammer is great. I'm still kind of catching up on that. Mm-hmm. I know Chris at Poor John's is like down the rabbit hole of Black Hammer now
because
we shared it with him. God Country could have kept going and maybe mm-hmm. will. I
thought it also was great, just like
very self-contained, but also like when you think about like if you read those back to back and think, all right, build the world, you know, which one has the more potential? Like We Live for sure is
I mean, because
ton of stuff we ready to go.
I want to know what happened before.
Yeah.
Not just what happened after, you know, like there were so many time jumps that mm-hmm. you're just like, what happened between this? What happened before it? You know, so like we can jump, we can go forward, we can go backward, we can go to other worlds.
For sure.
I mean, it's ripe for the picking. So please support it. Go check it out elsewhere or like find it online, download it, find it from a comic shop,
yep.
find it on Amazon, whatever. Pick it up. I don't think you'll regret it, especially because seriously, watch it, listen to it as you're reading it with the beautiful music mm-hmm. or with the beautiful artwork. And
it's a great experience.
It gave me goosebumps. Yep. So, I mean, that says a lot.
Drew, where can they find us on social media?
You can find us at Two Man Comic Book with the number 2 on Twitter, Two Man Comic Book Club, Facebook, and Instagram. We would love to talk with you more about this and other comics mm-hmm. on our Discord. There is a link in the show notes and a QR code possibly on the thing.
Yep.
And yeah, we want to talk with you. We're a couple months away from something pretty special, mm-hmm. we think. And you got to be up on the Discord to be a part of it. Or give us a call, 662-MAN-FAN-8, and tell us what you thought about We Live.
Yep.
That's all I got for that. So where can we find you?
You can find me at Alex Wayne Miller. Wayne is W-A-Y-N-E, just like Bruce Wayne, because I am Batman. I'm more active on Twitter, I think. Yeah. Facebook's me, whatever. Instagram, I'm kind of on there too. Tori, what about yourself?
You can find me on Twitter if you look hard enough.
Yeah, you gotta look for him.
You can it's find me
Easter egg.
At Drew Morris Comp on Twitter, Drew Morris Composer, other places. Yeah.
That's been it. We will see y'all next time with a new series.
Yeah, we don't even know what it is.
I have an idea.
Oh.
But we'll see.
Do tell.
Bye. The Two Man Comic Book Club podcast is hosted by Alex Miller and Drew Morris. Our guy in the chair is Torrance Watkins. Logos and design work are by Tessa Price. Original theme music and compositions are by Drew Morris.
All right, now I wet my pants.
Wet pants.
I took the wetness of my hands and rubbed it on my pants.
Superhero idea, wet pants. Do something with that.
The ability to wet them pants. Like wet distractions. Pants.
Yeah.
He wets his pants for ultimate and he can make you wet your pants.
Yeah. If it involves wet pants, he can do it.
Yeah. So like he's able to make people, he's highly sought after for like not hitman type thing, but like if you need somebody to not make a statement on TV or whatever, you can just be like wet pants and they'll just be like, oh, excuse me. And then the lawyer has to say it or whatever.
All right, we got it. Do you want to switch roles for the intro of this, but I still say, and I'm Drew? And you, hey guys, I'm Alex, and you do the what we're doing?
If you want to.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Oh my God, we're still recording.
Oh, that the whole time. Yeah. All right. So...